You've heard me rave about the Kel-Tec KSG shotgun for a long time, and the fact is, I cannot say enough good things about it. I mean, the KSG is the one that started it all, made ordinary shotguns obsolete, and still reigns supreme. But the big reason I keep raving about it is I'm also the proud owner of one, at least. And trust me, I really put the KSG to the test before adding it to my collection. It's perfect for home defense or tactical situations, and this 12 gauge is a reliable go-to that's easy to handle for everyone. The KSG shotgun is the first 12 gauge pump action shotgun chambered for 3-inch shells, and with dual tube magazines, offers a capacity of 12+1. Its downward shell ejection makes the KSG truly ambidextrous and ejects shells away from your face. It's compact, lightweight, and easy to maneuver and control. Learn more about the KSG shotgun at KeltecWeapons.com and follow Kel-Tec on social media. Visit KeltecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com.
When we invest in clean energy and electric vehicles and reduce population, more of our children can breathe clean air and drink clean water.
What gets me is she acts like we can't do that now.
Right.
Like, are we really struggling with having clean air and clean water and things like that? I mean, I didn't think that was, I didn't realize it was like such a big deal. Is it?
We have to Who's reduce the drinking? Population.
I mean, it's like we're not living in alleys. We're not like urchins living in alleys and, you know, not, what is the point of saying this stuff? Oh my gosh. Now guys, I'm just going to let you, give you some insight into the mood today. Welcome to the show. It's Monday. It's your lovable curmudgeon who is done with the what was I gonna say, my antibiotic allergic reaction. So we're actually normal looking today. We don't look like Sloth from the Goonies. We're not all raged out on roids and everything else. So just thank you for the kind prayers on that. People were like, I could tell that your eye looked puffy. I'm like, thank you so much. You're so kind. You're so sweet. I love you. But I just got to tell you, so I was trying to kind of turn things off for the weekend because there's a couple of things that we're trying to like we got a lot of stuff in the background that we're trying to nail down and get, you know, ready. And so sometimes you kind of have to compartmentalize and take a break from certain things. And I was trying to just shut down over the weekend with following headlines incessantly. Although some of the 2024 stuff has got me wound up, but just because I hate everything. So you have to realize that I hate the theater that is just for the sake of theater to delay the inevitability. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because I feel like it's theater for the sake of theater, and I cannot stand that. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We've got a bunch of other domestic stuff to get into as well, including we got foreign policy. I've got some culture. We got lots of stuff to hit. So welcome to the program, the Monday edition of the radio show, which you can listen to coast. You can stream YouTube, Facebook, DirecTV, Channel 347. You can go and smart off in the YouTube discuss. Be nice or Lorraine, I'll beat you to death. But we always good discussion, good people. Facebook, I mean, you can find us everywhere. So to get started, and I do highly encourage you to check out the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse, because there's a lot of good stuff that comes out of that regularly, right? So to kind of get started with this, everybody and their brother sent me this clip over the weekend. Or, well, actually within, I guess, the last 24 hours. Messages, Instagram, Facebook. I mean, I think if you guys thought I would see it in smoke signals, you sent it too. I saw it. It's, you know, I did see it. And I thought that was a weird remark. She says, the United States, we've got to reduce the population to fight climate. Do you realize that that's a whole gaffe? Or not a gaffe, but that's a lie? So here's one of the things that always has thrown me when I look back upon my life. So when I was in college, the most valuable class that I ever took in college was logic. Everything else was trash, garbage, absolute flaming turd. It was horrible. All the other classes were stupid. I literally had a class about women in Renaissance France that was a part of a women's studies because it's such a racket and you have to take these stupid electives. And I was miserable the entire time. Anyway, there was I took 2 years of this, of logic, because I took the first class. It's like math with words. And I so enjoyed it, even though the professor was weird, I kept taking it. And the professor was this crunchy dude. He wore a corduroy even in the summer. Who does that? Who wears corduroy in the summer? He wore corduroy in the summer. He drove a Volvo. It was, you know, it was poo brown, a Volvo. So, I mean, he's checking off every box possible, right? This is sort of the quintessential St. Louis progressive, right? Birkenstocks, check. Corduroy, check. Driving the Volvo, all the check. Had a, not a canoe, what am I thinking of? Kayak. Had a kayak on top of his Volvo almost all the time. Even when it was cold outside. Do people do that in the cold? I don't know. Had the kayak all the time. Literally, I'm not even kidding, hands to sky. Had a bumper sticker on said Volvo that was expertly placed, by the way. I'm pretty sure you used a leveler. That said, I'd rather be kayaking. I'm not kidding you. Where did he kayak in St. Louis? Was he like on the Merrimack? Did he go down the Hoosaw? Like, where'd he go? I don't know. Like, where do you kayak? But, I mean, there's a lot of rivers, but I digress. Anyway. And he was the guy, my first semester with him when I was a freshman, it was a class that was teaching ethics, and I'll be damned, he was teaching Peter Singer. Peter Singer is an abortion of intellectual thought, in case you were wondering. That's the best way to describe it. If you see your kids come home with a book and it's anything Peter Singer, it's trash. You better be, that class is sus. So anyway, At first I didn't like him, and I thought, oh my gosh, this nut-eating, tofu, hemp-weaving, you know, fruitcake, I just can't even deal. He was a very soft-spoken man. He wore wire-rimmed glasses. He had a very short haircut for a hippie, but he was one of those neat hippies, like a Frank Lloyd Wright hippie, you know? Anyway, so the first semester passed without event, and it was, you know, you had to say the right things in the class, and it was just really weird to learn Peter Singer, who just had no regard for human life or humanity. But then it got interesting when I had him for logic. Because I had him for two classes, ethics and logic. And the logic was fascinating. And pretty much so a lot of what I do now was based on that class that I learned. I mean, at least it helped me acquire the rudimentary skills to break apart stupid arguments. And it was such a valuable class that I just kept taking the next level and the next level until I took all of them. And even though he was a super far lefty, he did appreciate logic to the point where he prided himself on being logical, even if it undercut his personal ideology. So his vanity was greater than his obsession with ideology, which I thought was interesting. So long story short, now I have this teacher, and a lot of the stuff that I recognize now in politics is from that class. The only valuable class ever. It should be a required course. I don't even ever know what happened to him. He'd probably be appalled learning what I've become, you know, because a lot of people think that being a conservative commentator is worse than being a meth dealing prostitute, but I digress. So this comment from Kamala Harris, she's calling on the U.S. to reduce population. This was one of the things that he had touched on in ethics, and he actually gave us. It's it was the world hunger myth. And it touched upon this myth that's been perpetuated for the past, 30, 40 years about overpopulation. There isn't actually an overpopulation on planet Earth. In fact, there has been a decrease in population. And so that book and several others, you know, subsequently that I read, gets into some of the stereotypical things that you think of overpopulation, the themes of overpopulation, and it destroys them. Case in point, they went and they looked, in one of the books that I read, they looked at population nation by nation. So what's one of the things that you always hear about, like with Italy? What's a common stereotype with Italy? Big Italian families, right? Big Italian families, they get together every Sunday, they have their meal after church. But that's slowly fading away. Not that they don't get together on Sundays, which they do, but the big aspect of the big Italian family, that's changing because people are having fewer children to the point where they can't even keep up with the current population level. Like in Japan, it's incredibly bad. They're going to have a huge population of older people, but yet not enough younger people to sustain it in the economic system. The United States is barely keeping status quo. But in a lot of these other nations, particularly a number of European nations, it is woefully, woefully under the rate required to maintain population. But there were some interesting things. There's been several books written in the past 20 years that looks at, you know, countries like Pakistan or countries like India that actually do not only meet the requirements to maintain status quo, but they exceed them. But this idea that there's overpopulation is a lie. It is an absolute lie. Look at the birth rate of every nation. It's a lie. They're lying to you. You know why they're lying to you? Because they think that you're too, either too busy, you're too wrapped up in trying to make ends meet because you have to pay Joe Biden's taxes. You know, he wants you to pay for everyone else's grad school college tuition. So you got to keep up with that. But then, you know, at the same time, too, while they're lying to you, they know that you're too busy. They also simultaneously think you're too stupid to follow along with this. I mean, that's the whole purpose of, you know, how they approach government. They want it to be too big so you can't follow everything. So she says this, Gaff, we got to reduce the population. She says she meant to say reduce pollution. But what have you heard hand in hand about pollution and climate change? Population, have you not? Is that not something that you have heard frequently? So that's why I think this is totally sus and I don't believe her. Do you believe her? It's not, it's dude, she meant it. I think she meant it hand in hand. She was at Coppin State University in Baltimore. She's talking about building a clean energy economy. Now, the official White House transcript acknowledges and corrects her error, but they said that in the transcript, population is crossed out and pollution is added in brackets to denote what she intended to say. Do you believe this? Because if you do, let me tell you about a fantastic piece of real estate that you can get in on the ground level. It's a bridge that I've recently come into possession of. Very famous bridge. You might have heard of it. The Brooklyn Bridge, right? It's, yes, it's that famed bridge. I own it and I will sell it to you. Right? I mean, I'm all about being generous. I want everyone to have a piece of American, you know, iconography. I got that to sell to you. But that's what this is. I honestly think a lot of the climate change is reducing the population. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I was raised by one. So I don't know, right? And then I have to come to work every day with one who like owns stock in tinfoil. Surprised he doesn't have his hat on. Now, it's under your clothes, isn't it? You're just wrapped up under your clothes and positive. It's Kane, by the way. Yeah. I think he's made of tinfoil at this point.
That's me.
She was meaning. Oh, my gosh. Before, because I got a whole bunch of other stuff. Please, for the love. I know Steve's like, we got 5 minutes. That means you need to shut up. Can we play really, really quickly where she did the burden by? She said it again this weekend. She said it again. What is it? The burden of what? What did she say? Unburdened by what has been? Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, for the love. Can we just hit this real quick? Because she said it again, guys.
And it is with this understanding, this vision, to see what can be unburdened by what has been, that Rev has dedicated
Jesse Jackson. She called him Rev.
That coalition.
That's like calling a prostitute, you know, chaste. Calling him Reverend, it's like, hey, whore, you are chaste. Same thing, right? Does she not know how often she says that? Does she get paid by the unburdened by what has been lobby? I'm curious. We got a lot of stuff to hit. We're just not, I actually have not even gotten into everything else. So we got to talk about some of the 2024 stuff. I have something very, well, ungracious to say coming up. You probably don't want to miss it. It's not going to surprise some of you. Just please know that when I talk about people, I know them. Especially when I'm very caustic, I've known them for a long time and I can say these things. So we're going to have a little conversation. Also, we got to get into We got to get into some foreign policy. Also, and millennials want to criminalize misgendering. What is wrong? Except for Steve. Steve is, we exclude him. But what is wrong with, what is wrong with this? What is wrong with these people?
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle ready-to-drink coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
As Biden continues to tout his Bidenomics plan, does any of it sound familiar? How about the Soviet-style five-year plan? State-run capitalism is not capitalism. Command and control economics fails every time it's tried. Bidenomics equals Chinanomics. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Quick note on a derailment in Pennsylvania from WPVI. This is the Channel 6 ABC affiliate. White Marsh. A CSX freight train derailed in Montgomery County early this morning. According to officials, the crash happened at about 4:50 a.m. The 40-car CSX train was operating on Norfolk Southern tracks. Aren't you so happy that all of the nut-eating, hemp-wearing, tree-hugging, weird, you know, smoking, like stuff-smoking hippies were able to get rid of the pipeline so we could have the safer transport of rail. Yay! So investigators are there on scene. They're looking at any kind of carcinogenic chemicals because apparently there was one that I can't pronounce because it has a million consonants. So, yeah, there you go. Also, a couple of other things to hit. A Russian nuclear enrichment plant explosion. One dead, hundreds injured. Sounds kind of Chernobyl-esque. A British Columbia man was fired from the job. He saved a moose calf on the highway. How are you firing a dude who saved a moose calf? They said there was a black bear standing there. And the black bear was looking at the moose. I would have done the same thing, and I would have taken my dismissal privately. And a duck went for a ride on a Cedar Point roller coaster that reaches 93 miles per hour. The duck survived. Was its name Howard? It's what we're all wondering. Stick with us. Folks, do you believe in our founders' vision for America? That our republic will only survive if we are an educated and informed people who know our rights and duties? Since 1844, Hillsdale College has sought to educate all who wish to learn about these timeless principles of self-government. For more than 50 years, the college has worked to spread that mission by sending Imprimis, their Digest of Liberty, to millions of Americans, including me. Imprimis features some of the best speeches given at Hillsdale events, and now an audio version of the popular Speech Digest is available in a new podcast of the same name. And like the printed publication, Imprimis the podcast is always free. You can hear the best arguments from speakers such as Christopher Rufo, Mark Stein, and Hillsdale College President Larry P. Arn, among many others, all read by Hillsdale students. Visit DanaForHillsdale.com to subscribe today and start listening to Imprimis today, all for free. To listen, visit DanaForHillsdale.com. That's DanaForHillsdale.com.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
You were talking about taking a position of strength against China. Do you disagree with former Vice President's position that a show of force in Ukraine with U.S. military help there was actually demonstrating to the Chinese strength that they are watching?
I think it's more likely the case that China would prefer a protracted stalemate where a lot of resources are being dumped in to that area because I think they see our ammunition stocks are dwindling. We don't have the capacity right now to be able to respond to Asia. And so as president, what I will do, I will prioritize the Indo-Pacific as the top threat. It doesn't mean we can't work with our European allies. It doesn't mean we can't help. But I would never want to dwindle what we have in the United States and then not be able to help Taiwan or to help other of our allies. I think the only thing that China cares about is what hard power are they going to face in their backyard. That, at the end of the day, is what they care about.
That was, first off, can reporters, when they ask questions, remember to put their stupid mic up to their mouths and then hold it back to the... I mean, this is 101 stuff. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. It was my first thing I thought. Now, he's talked to extent about that, and I wanted to touch on when he's talking about helping Taiwan. Don't misunderstand that. That's not like, you know, Haley and Pence helping Ukraine. That is, he's thinking of, which is what a lot of people, myself included, are thinking of, is that South China Sea. Because so much, those are international waters and so much trade. What is it that Yates told us? Will you make a note? Remind me to ask Yates this, because he has all this stuff right on the top of his head. He's like the China policy chair. He ran Radio Asia. So he was like part of the very subtle pushback against the commies there for influence. And they hated and they ran him out because they think he's a threat. He's friends with Jimmy Lai. But he, you know, was noting, too, that I think it's something like 80%, a ridiculous amount that I actually didn't believe, of international trade passes through those waters. And that's the thing that China is trying to claim. That's why the Barbie thing, people weren't mad over the Barbie movie. They were mad because the little line, and it, as innocuous as it seemed in this drawn map, they had this little line that was denoting and affirming China's claim on that in those international waters. Now think about it. If they controlled that, think about what that would do to trade. Y'all thought that the supply chain issues were bad now? Buckle up, buttercups, because you're about to grab your ankles. That's how, I cannot emphasize how bad. I was looking at all of this stuff. In fact, what I did Friday after the show is I went back and I was looking at all of the, everything that comes through there. I'm sickened. It makes me sick to think about how many of the variables that we use to make antibiotics, A, that come from China, and B, go through that area. Not just that, but think of the superconductors. So Taiwan, the number one manufacturer of the superconductor, the chips, that all comes to this area. China's trying to lay claim to it. Imagine the fallout. So when he's talking about quote-unquote helping, he's looking at, there are some, now I'm not saying that it constitutes war, but there are some American interests that you have to be mindful of in that area. So that's kind of an off-the-cuff reference to that, because we've talked about that on the program, and he's mentioned that briefly, and I thought his language was interesting. It was indicative of that. So, but he's right with China, because Russia's a dying empire. The stuff with Ukraine is a money laundering op. This stuff could have been, I know it's unpopular for me to say, I don't give a rat's ass. Neocons can eat me. I'm done. I'm so done with it. This is about laundering money through a proxy war with a dying empire. That's what it's about. And we're prolonging it by pretending that that's not what it's about. So when people sit here and are like, oh my gosh, Ukraine is the last. I don't have anything against the Ukrainian people. I have something against being gaslit and being told I'm not a moron. Okay, we're all pretty educated people. I know that there's the elite in DC that thinks we're too damn stupid to follow what's happening with the day-to-day operations of where our tax dollars are going as it concerns foreign conflict, but we know enough to know what we know. We know this. What interests are directly impacted? Not a one. Not my circus, not my monkeys, okay? Super simple. Aggravating. And so I just, the whole thing, I get frustrated. And we take our eye off the ball that is China. It's not, let me reframe this in a way that is even more accurate. This is not a proxy battle with Russia. It's a proxy battle with China. Who's back in Russia? Who's back in Russia's fuel? Who's back in their currency? Who's backing a lot of the stuff that they do? You just answered it. I heard your thoughts. Yes, China. It is one of the, it's more of a proxy struggle with that than anything else. So this is accurate. Now I got to say, this is why, now there's, I call balls and strikes. There's things that I like. There's not a single candidate that I think is perfect. And I don't, I get aggravated if any kind of campaign expects me to pretend so. That is the quickest way to get me to put claws out. And I told y'all who I like in the primary. And I got very practical reasons. I'm a very transactional person. I like 8 years and not four. That is one of my biggest driving factors in this. And I also like some of the strategy that's coming out of the governor. I didn't like the whole let's rename some of the, you know, the forts and all that. I'm like, why? Why are we doing that? But this did, I will say, I don't know why Trump said this. And I want to play. Don't get mad at me. Be like, she's criticized her. I actually know him. Unlike the people who get mad at me for saying this. I know this. I criticize. I disagree. There's disagreement and there's criticizing. You can disagree with people that are like-minded. It's okay. We don't have to, be cultists like the left. We're not the damn Borg. My gosh. I mean, we all need to hang it up and just let's go to hell in a handbasket if we're expected to be lockstep, kissing rings, kissing butts. We literally had a war over this. We don't do that. It's in our American DNA. Maybe some people's DNA is waning a little bit. I don't know. But you don't have to be lockstep with everything. For the life of me, I have no idea why 45 was saying that he would give more weaponry. I listened to this. I didn't believe the clips that are out there. I don't believe anything, no matter from what faction it comes from. I listened to the entire damn thing. And I was like, my gosh, I want to go and retcon his answer so bad. I don't know. He was giving this interview and he was saying that he wanted to end the war in Ukraine in day one. I don't like it when people say I'm going to do something in day one. I don't care who you are, because you're not going to do it. But he says if Putin does not bring the war to an end, etc. He was talking to Maria Bartiromo. Now, Maria Bartiromo was asking him a very legitimate question. She's a big time Trump supporter. And I like Maria. I've always gotten along with Maria. She's a class act. Now, Trump was saying that Volodymyr Zelensky was being very honorable. And he said, quote, when they asked him about the perfect phone call I made, which I still love that he says it's a perfect phone call. I don't know why Patriot Mobile doesn't adopt that for make perfect phone calls every time. It needs to be. Make your perfect phone call with Patriot Mobile. Yeah. Note to Glenn and Jenny, make that a shirt. I'm just saying. But he was like, well, you know, he goes that, you know, it was a perfect phone call. He said Zelensky was very honorable. I think Zelensky was doing the enemy and my enemy is my friend in that kind of situation. Whether he was being honorable or not is up for debate. He realized that he could get a leg up on somebody who was corrupt, but also his opponent. So that might make someone look more virtuous, but that doesn't necessarily transfer virtue to that individual. Does that make sense? So he was saying, look, I know Zelensky well. I know Putin well. I don't know why. And this is Audio Soundbite 9. Listen to this. This is some of what we're talking about.
You said you could end the war in Ukraine in 24 hours.
Yes, I
could. How would you do that?
I know Zelensky very well. I felt he was very honorable because when they asked him about the perfect phone call that I made, he said it was indeed perfect. He said it was, he didn't even know what they were talking about. He could have grandstanded, oh, I felt threatened.
Well, that's not going to be enough for Putin to stop bombing
Ukraine.
No,
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that I know Zelensky very well and I know Putin very well, even better. And I had a good relationship, very good with both of them. I would tell Zelensky, no more, you got to make a deal. I would tell Putin, if you don't make a deal, we're going to give them a lot. We're going to give them more than they ever got if we have to. I will have the deal done in one day. One day.
I don't know if I necessarily believe that, because remember what I was saying. This isn't just your pushing against Russia. China is behind it as well. Now, why is that? China needs the distraction. They need us to be distracted by what's happening there. So you can't just make a deal with Putin. Because you got Xi Jinping involved too. Now, do you see how it gets a little tricky and a little difficult? I will say this, because some people were saying, oh my gosh, look, he's praising Putin. He's not praising Putin. Here's the thing. Do you want to, and I asked this from a lot of the, you know, there's some conservatives out there that think that all the conservatism and Republicanism started the day that they popped out of their mamas. History began that day that I was born. It didn't. It didn't, kitten. It's been going along for a long time. And a lot of the stuff that you're proposing now is stuff George W. Bush already did. And it failed miserably. And that's why you got the Tea Party. Anyway, I digress. The whole situation with talking this way about Putin and Zelensky, you have to be a diplomat. Do you want to be hardcore and try to go out there and have a phallus measuring contest? Or do you want to actually try to push for peace? Sun Tzu was like a guy who wins it all without firing a single shot. I'm abridging this, obviously. He's the successful warrior. So you have to think about it that way. However, I think that he gave too much lip service to the Ukraine thing. And I thought this isn't just about Ukraine. It's not just about Russia. You cannot ignore the very shadowy involvement of China in this. And that concerned me that that wasn't recognized and acknowledged. Because how can you successfully mitigate an issue when you're not including that in it? So that was the thing. Now, there were a couple of things in here. And we're going to get into some of this. They had one of the TPUSA things. Can I just make a note of this? You're going to get mad at me, but I don't care. I know this guy. I worked with him for a decade, so I know him very, very well. In fact, one of the last times I was around him, he was driving a car in which Andrew Breitbart and I jumped out of, and we ran to confront David Brock in front of Media Matters and almost had the police called on us. That was fun. So I wanted to play this quick. This was Bannon has a vested interest in trying to. I don't even know why Bannon's taken seriously. This was the guy who brought in a reporter, gave him unfettered access to the White House. And one of the worst two hit pieces that came out that were BS about Trump were because Bannon screwed up because he wanted to suck up to this reporter and he allowed him to come into the White House. Don't forget, he actually called Don Jr. a traitor. Why are we kissing this guy's ass? He called Don Jr. a traitor. How short are people's memories? Maybe listen to somebody who knew him. He'll turn on you in a heartbeat. Listen to this stuff. This aggravated me. This was when he was at the thing and he was going on about one of the other primary candidates.
Ron DeSantis is a tragic figure. Good governor. Could have been a great governor. He drank the Kool-Aid of the Murdochs and the donor class. You know why? They're neoliberal neocons.
He doesn't even know what the word neocon means. Let me tell you about some about Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon wants to be famous. He's a wannabe Earl of Warwick during the last days of War with the Roses, except without the money, without the smarts, without the legitimate connections, or the motivation to do any work besides sit on his ass with his pay-for-play hokey podcast and have these low-T people act like he's like King Blank of Blank Mountain. Take it from somebody who knows. So, why? I mean, again, going to that guy for strategy is like going to a prostitute and asking about chastity. Went at him once, do it again. I'm done with it. I don't know why he went and called Jr. a traitor. Don Jr., he perpetuated the story that Don Jr. was doing the Alpha Bank thing and trying to cut deals with Russians. How are people forgetting this? Disagreeing with Trump on a couple of policy issues is one thing. Doing what this guy did? You want to talk about being a traitor to the cause? There you go. And then he tries to rewrite it. Because he gets sycophants that think that conservatism or activism or the struggle began the day that they were born or became politically aware. No, it didn't. The only successes this guy has is glomming onto people who are more successful, riding their coattails and acting like he created them. Sarah Palin, Andrew Breitbart, I digress. Don't have got enough middle fingers for that. It's Monday. We got a lot of 2024 stuff coming up. I said what I said, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it in person, too. We have also Days of These United States. Also, and can people shut up about the Tracy Chapman thing? The media is trying to bait everyone into this race thing because of Tracy Chapman and Luke Combs. Stop it. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke problem. propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Maybe I should just walk off.
Guys, can I say something?
Oh, it's
can I say
right.
something as somebody that's been in the streets and has participated in a lot of demonstrations?
Shut up.
I think
behind security.
I want you to know that we have been fighting to make it clear that Israel is a racist state, that the Palestinian people deserve self-determination and autonomy, that the dream of a two-state solution is slipping away from us, that it does not even feel possible.
She's like, I was in the streets with like a ton of security. That's Premia Jayapal. She's at Net. If you don't know what Netroots Nation is, that's, we always joke and call it Nutroots. That's all the nutty leftists online. I have such a story how we infiltrated and then they found out that we were there and they lost their ever loving minds. We all were wearing like cameras and all this. This was like 10 years ago. It was hysterical. But yeah, racist much? Anti-Semitic much? I mean, there's one thing to say that you disagree with certain aspects of Israeli government, but to be like, they're all racist. Yeah, you're an anti-Semite. Stick with us.
Certainly you can understand that Americans, many of them, first of all, are aghast that there was ever cocaine in the White House. We heard that there were reports of marijuana a couple times found there last year as well. But more importantly, that it's case closed. In less than 2 weeks, we know nothing about who brought this in, inability to track people, no surveillance cameras. What if it was something much more dangerous?
Well, again, I can't really speak to the investigation that was done by the Secret Service. They did the best they could to track down how it got there and who it might have belonged to, and they just were not able to come up with any forensic evidence that proves it. But of course, look, we take this seriously. That's not the kind of thing we want to see happen. Now, it did happen in a visitor's lobby area out just outside the main West Wing. So it was highly trafficked area. We're going to take a look at and how that happened. And obviously, if there's things we can do to prevent
that was Sunday.
In the future, certainly we'll
so
do that.
So this was Sunday. So you would think that the head of the NSC kind of know, right? I mean, you know, it's NSC. You'd kind of think that John Kirby, who is the coordinator for strategic communications at the National Security Council, NSC. What's that S for stand again? What's that stand again for? Security. Security?
Security.
So, yeah, you think you might know. He's like, I can't tell. It's because they know who it is. You don't know because they know. That's what this is all about. Welcome back to the program. I can't believe, is it really the top of our second hour already? Good night. This is just flying by. This is craziness. So he can't really speak to the investigation that they did, guys. He just can't speak to it. So get over it. I do think, and I mentioned this last week, one of the reasons it concerns me, I mean, obviously it's cocaine and it's like very advantageous for me to point this out because they're doofy Democrats, but that could have been, that's a major security loophole, massive security loophole. Also, I got to say this too. Can you imagine for one moment, like for you parents out there, I want you to think. You got a 50-something-year-old baby child who will not stop oversharing on his smut sites and recording himself and taking selfies. I mean, I have friends on Instagram that are just nonstop with like the streams and the video. And I'm like, God love them. I just don't operate that way. But can you imagine like oversharing to that extent, but with all the stuff that he's been doing? Can you imagine if that was your child, your 50-something-year-old baby who made his own? Well, you know, he's a filmmaker, Kane.
Yeah.
You know. It's a highbrow entertainment set in mirrored elevators involving cocaine and hookers. Filming himself. He documents his entire life. I've never seen anybody who tells himself like this guy. How many times has he got in trouble? Like, he got in trouble when he was younger. He got in trouble even before he was getting married. He got in trouble after he got married. He got in trouble. He tried to go in the Naval Reserves and they needed a drug test. And they were like, oh my gosh, you are on drugs. You can't even come for your first weekend. This was after he had two waivers. The first one because of his age. The second one because of his past drug use. So to walk in shame after all these people laid their neck out on the line to vouch for this guy. He was rejected still because he couldn't stop drugs. He's got grown kids. Like, not nay a thought for the kids, right? Grown kids who get on social media. He's got grown kids. Baby, little infant, 50-something, almost 60-year-old Hunter. He's got grown kids. Imagine, those kids knowing that their dad's doing all this stuff. But who enables this? You know, say what you will about Donald Trump, but I can't imagine Don or Eric doing this. I don't think that Trump per se physically would beat them to death, but he would have someone do it, I think. And if he was in the White House, I'm pretty sure that it would be done on the South Lawn. I just can't even see that happening. Can you imagine? I don't even think Eric Trump drinks.
And the media would never let it go.
Yeah. Like, Eric Trump is such a health food nut. Like, I know him and his wife. They're both super nice. They're on. Look, I love the outdoors too. Stop. But you know what they do for fun? They're like, let's go drink juice, green vegetable juices, and hike a glacier. Literally in the Arctic Circle. That's what they did. Literally last week. That's what they were doing. That's their. God love them. You know. And then meanwhile, Hunter Biden's recorded himself going 172 miles per hour down a highway in Nevada. While he's, like, snorting coke. You know. Different strokes for different folks, I guess. You know, I think Donald Trump Jr. might spend a weekend, doing his reloads. And here you got Hunter Biden in a mirrored elevator. It's like a horrible game of Clue with a prostitute and cocaine. No word on that. Nobody's gonna say anything. It's the enabling aspect of it. But I was thinking about this now. I might be overanalyzing it. Do you think that this is also symptomatic with a huge problem of the Jacobin left? Because here's why. You're never responsible for what you do. Have they at all looked at this as though Hunter Biden's responsible for anything that he does? What do you hear usually when you see people, even in the middle, bring up his transgressions? And it's not just about his transgressions. It's about how they've compromised security at the White House, which is, like, really the big driving thing here. But people say, how dare you? He's an addict. You're so mean. How are you so mean? He's an addict. And you can't criticize it because suddenly it's not his fault because he chose to do drugs and now he's an addict. I mean, it is 2023. We all know drugs are bad, okay? South Park taught us. So he's just, you're never responsible for the things he does. He shouldn't have to be held to those any consequences. He's not responsible. He's an addict. Oh, you can't get mad at him. He's trying to turn his life around. Oh, you can't wonder, why is Joe Biden allowing all of the freeloading Bidens to live with him at the White House? Oh, because he wants to keep Hunter close. Hunter and his family close, because he doesn't, he could relapse. He's just, he's an addict. It's not his fault. Don't criticize Joe as a dad. He's got a stutter. He fell up the stairs. How dare you? He has a stutter. With his feet? Like, what happened? There's just no accountability, ever. None. It's a real problem here. Now, I want to move to a couple of other things I want to make sure we touch on, because we were certain things that I want to make sure that I get to. I wanted to play really quickly this audio soundbite. This is 18. This is Jake Sullivan, NSA. On the NDAA, that's the National Defense Authorization Act, they, over the weekend, this was one of the goals that Democrats had over the weekend, because there were all of these different interviews that different surrogates did, and they were pushing this narrative that it's Republicans that put the culture war in this bill. Listen.
Start right there. This national defense bill would eliminate funding for service members' travel to states where abortion's legal, block coverage for transgender health procedures, and eliminate military diversity offices. Would President Biden veto this legislation as is?
Well, this legislation is never getting to the president's desk, because what you've seen from an extreme group of Republicans is to put forward a set of amendments that try to mix domestic social debates with the needs, the security needs of our nation.
He acts like they were the ones who put it in the bill. Again, Republicans didn't put any of this stuff in here. Democrats did. Democrats put this in here. Republicans didn't do this. So how are you going to sit here and say, well, they're just trying to... You guys put this in here. You could have had a straight no chaser bill and you chose to muck it up. You know, you could have done this separately, but you chose not to do that. That's a bummer for you. But you don't get to sit here and accuse the other side of, oh, well, they're engaging in this culture war, because they are rejecting the culture aspects that you put into a military budget bill. It makes no sense. None. That's like some of the stupid stuff that they do. And then the trans stuff. I'm so done with it. Listen to this. Listen to this survey. Half of millennials want to criminalize misgendering. There's no such... Half of millennials want to criminalize a made-up, fabricated, not real thing. It was a recent survey conducted by Redfield and Wilton Strategies for Newsweek, and it reveals that almost half of millennials... These millennials had to be raised by little boomers. They support the idea of misgendering someone for being considered a criminal offense. They want to make it a criminal offense if they can't force you to use the incorrect scientific pronoun. Almost half of them believe in using the incorrect pronouns for a transgender person. They think it should be considered a criminal offense. They said that the suggested, this is the age between 25 to 34, 44% were in favor, 31% disagreed. 25% had no opinion or said they didn't know. So they want to use state power to enforce language, like China, like North Korea, like the Jacobins, French Revolution. Speaking of which, I wanted to touch on that. Did you guys see Anthony Blinken's tweet about that over the weekend? Anthony Blinken, member of government, by the way, and had this whole thing. He said, quote, Secretary of State, the War of Independence and the French Revolution were fueled by the same aspirations for freedom, democracy, and human rights. Today, we're more committed than ever to defending them together. Warmest wishes on Bastille Day to the people of France. And I said, some people who were historically stupid disagreed with me, and I'd agree with them, or I can't, but because we'd all be wrong. The Reign of Terror wasn't about any kind of American principles. He is historically, absolutely historically illiterate. Because here's one big thing that you need to realize, and this was not something, you know, this was Tocqueville, and it was Locke as well, but particularly Tocqueville, who had noted that all of this began, like, very early on, the pursuit of freedom was no longer the driving cause of the revolutionists. I mean, when they went up there, they were putting people's heads on a pike and parading them around the city. There were only, at that point, seven actual, what you could argue were political prisoners in the Bastille. I think there were like seven in there. Most everybody was already out. And so you had a bunch of revolutionaries that went there, and they were motivated by more than just this idea for this. It was it was the equity and not so much equality, but the equity. They had already been pushed into adopting these socialist precepts. So it wasn't just about the pursuit of freedom. It was freedom to, not freedom from. And that was, you know, that was the big thing of it. I mean, ours was found in the protection of individualism. Theirs quite different. Theirs was, it pushed freedom to, and then socialist subjugation. I mean, and it was so unsuccessful, by the way, again, just a flashback, it was so unsuccessful that they got taken over by dictator, and then the monarchy, the Bourbon Restoration, the monarchy was restored back to the throne. So there's a major difference there. But to sit here and celebrate that, a lot of the stuff that we saw is very reminiscent of everything today, which is why I bring up this millennial story. Because back then, at that time, this was literally they went to Bastille, and then after that they were searching the streets looking for people to kill. People were dying the day that they stormed the Bastille, because you had the revolutionaries going out and killing everyone. Did our revolutionaries do that? I mean, hell, Washington insisted on trials for redcoats. Now, granted, some of them were a little bit theatrical and just for that purpose, but I mean, you had John Adams, who literally fought to save the concept of due process, a cornerstone of this republic, by demanding that the Redcoats at the Boston Massacre have legal representation. Don't sit here and compare this to the what you saw in France. Nobody in France, none of their revolutionaries did that. Ours did, because they were so beholden to liberty, to due process, to the strength and power of the individual. That's what they actually put their reputations online to protect. Major difference. This guy's a moron. It's embarrassing that you have such stupid people in government that do this. I mean, good grief. And now, just like at that time, you couldn't say the wrong thing, you couldn't show support for the wrong thing, because you'd go to the court of public opinion, right? And now you have millennials. They want to criminalize misgendering. Coming up, speaking of some of the culture stuff, you ought to hear about this Portland surgeon. He's called Dr. Frankenstein. He's revealing that there actually are some drawbacks to genital mutilation that they call gender-affirming surgery, that people are going to probably be incontinent for the rest of their lives. They're always going to have issues. I mean, it's just...
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So this is from WSB-TV. Celebrating 75 years. Hall County, Georgia. A little girl was recovering from a beaver attack. She was attacked by a rabid beaver at Lake Lanier. Bitten over the weekend while swimming. It's one of their family's favorite spots. They said that the little girl was swimming in the lake. She was attacked and bitten. They said it was the biggest beaver they ever saw. Please cue Primus. It came in at about 50, 55 pounds. 50 to 55 pounds? 50 to 55 pounds. Jiminy Christmas. The game warden investigated, and they said they had to check for rabies. The beaver did test positive for rabies, so they said it's very rare, so they knew something was up. That's terrifying. And also 50 to 55 pounds, seriously. Gen X has saved just $40,000 for retirement, according to some surveys. That's only a fraction of what they need to actually live, you know, moderately comfortably. It's National Institute on Retirement Security. They said it's just a frat. Come on, Gen X. Come on. You got to say more than that. In Hong Kong, they're saying stare at smokers to stop them. That's their new anti-smoking approach. Hong Kong, their health chief says the public should stare at smokers to make them feel bad about what they're doing and to get them to stop smoking. There's something about that that's actually really, really funny, but I don't know. A 7.2 magnitude earthquake struck near the Alaskan Peninsula, prompting a very brief tsunami warning earlier today. Also, a startup is aiming to make lab-grown human eggs, making everything gross and transforming options for creating... I mean, there are horror films like this. Stick with us.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
So you weren't in Iowa. You weren't at the Tucker Carlson forum. But if you were being pressed on Ukraine like that, how would you have responded?
I would have said, you've always been wrong about this, Tucker, and you're still wrong. That, in fact, what's going on, George, is that this is a proxy war with China. The Chinese are... funding the Russian war by buying Russian oil. They're coordinating with the Iranians to provide lethal weapons to the Russian army. And we could decide when to have this conflict. Right now, the Ukrainians are willing to fight this fight for themselves if they have our support to be able to win it. If the Chinese watch us back away from Ukraine, as Tucker Carlson and others would advocate, believe me, the next move will be Taiwan.
So this soundbite intrigued me for a number of reasons, and I want to break this down. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you, your lovable curmudgeon. Listen coast to coast. Watch the simulcast. So there is I understand what he's saying, but I still disagree. I also don't know why he's running for office. For the love, like, really? Like, wait, let's sidebar. Like, really, Kane? Why? Why is he running for office? So he is correct in one aspect, where he says that the Chinese are heavily involved in this. They're buying oil. They're propping Russia up, right? This is where I think the message that he, and I'm not saying he's right. I'll get into that in a minute. But what I want to do is pause for that little segment of it, because he's saying that China is very involved in this. Have you heard really Pence hit that? No. Haley hasn't hit it at all. And I know, because we've had her on the show to talk about it. And Pompeo to an extent. I don't know if that's on purpose or why. because the way whenever they talk about it, they always act like it's, you know, the evil empire of Russia. It's a dying empire, but they always act like it's Russia. That's the bigger threat. They always act like there is one bigger threat than the other. There's only one threat, and it's China. China, Russia, the dying empire, is a puppet that China has its arm in. That does not mean that you get involved in a proxy war with China, but also kind of in a proxy war with Russia, with Ukraine. You know what I mean? It's weird. There's a lot of implications here. I think it's bait. It is bait. That's where I stop agreeing with them. Yes, this is China propping this up. China is using Russia as bait and a distraction. They're propping them up. But where I think Christine and others get it incorrect is that this, they think it's more than just bait. Like, this is the only place that they would actually engage us. So if they see us backing down, no, if we refuse to take the bait and have all these nuclear superpowers duking it out over what is a territorial dispute, people can get mad about it all they want to. It's not personal, it's politics, but that's what it is. We're looking at U.S. interests in this particular area. You can't sit here and say, well, here's an area in which there is conflict and U.S. interests aren't actually affected right here per se. So you still need to get involved anyway. The Ukrainians will fight it out. They act like the Ukrainians battling this battle are going to defeat China then. That's ultimately like what he's not saying, but inadvertently intimating. Like, oh, well, if the Ukrainians do this, then they're just going to beat China for us. I mean, am I wrong? That's what he's saying here. And that's wrong. That's dumb, and that's not right. It's wrong. It is a distraction, and it's bait to tie up resources so that they can do whatever they want elsewhere. Now, I'm not saying getting a full, you know, scale conflict regarding Taiwan, but if the United States looks like it has the resources and ability to do so, that is a great deterrent to not having that conflict. Does that make sense? I mean, peace through strength. There's a reason why that phrase exists. If you look like a hard ass and that you would pummel someone in the hole in the ground, guess what? People are less likely going to FAFO with you. That is the whole point. It's to have it, to not use it. It's the only type. There's only several different types of skill sets that you develop or resources that you develop with the hopes of never having to use them. Military capability and firearm skills. Going back to the quick point where he intimates, and I do think I'm wrong on that, because that's what I get from him when he's like, well, the Ukrainians, they're happy to do all this for us. Like, they're the ones holding China back. They act like that's the real focus there, right? Isn't that what you got from him too?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is just, I don't agree with that. That's so wrong. That's so incredibly wrong. But it's holding the attention of America and taking all the oxygen out of any kind of conversation about what's happening in the Pacific or what's happening with Belt and Road. I mean, China is essentially buying the loyalty of all these countries and their mineral rights by saying, here's some crappy infrastructure that's going to fall apart in a couple of years. Let us take all your mineral rights. Meanwhile, you have the Bidens here doing everything that they can to enrich in China, enriching themselves at the expense of also enriching China. I mean, it is mind-numbingly ridiculous. So when I heard this soundbite, I thought, but that's where Tucker isn't wrong. And I thought Tucker's Q&A, and people were like, oh, did you attack Tucker? I didn't attack Tucker. Tucker's a dear friend of mine. I've known him for years. I didn't like the Andrew Tate. I don't like Andrew Tate. So that's my whole thing. I mean, I think that you can talk to anyone and do interviews with anybody because, you know, why not? I just don't like Andrew Tate because I think he's a beta male. That being said, I thought Tucker did the best job in interviewing any candidate of anybody in any debate ever or anyone on cable news ever. Any of the past debates with cable news hosts, they pale in comparison to the questions that he asked at this forum in Iowa. And he attacked it. He did not attack. I don't want to use that phrase. He questioned them from the right. Does that make sense? He didn't question them from a perspective of measuring where they stood compared to the left. He questioned them from a perspective of measuring where they stood compared to the right, compared to the Constitution. He made them contrast themselves with conservative positions on ideals. And that is always the best measure of a candidate. That's why I was freaking out when I saw some of these candidates, like Trump, particularly running from the left. And I'm not criticizing Trump for the sake of criticizing Trump. I'm hoping that they don't do stuff like that anymore, because I want such a strong bench that if DeSantis doesn't get the nomination, then I want the next best person. And I don't want to have any compromises with them. I don't want to have any blemishes on that. I don't want the Democrats to be able to go out and use anything on them. Like, I'm trying to cover all of my bases. I am incredibly transactional. I'm in this for what do I as the voter get out of it? Make no mistake. I don't give a rat's ass about making friends. I don't care about power adjacency. What do I, the voter, get out of it? What do we get out of it? What's in it for us? That's what I'm looking at. And as a result, I want my first choice, I want my second choice, and I want my third choice to be untouchable. Now, I know going through a primary, it's not going to be possible. But you see what I'm saying here. That's why I was like, stop it. Stop attacking from the left. Stop attacking another candidate from the left. Don't do that. The best way to do it is to make people measure themselves by conservative principles. That is really how you're going to get a good gauge on this. And I thought he did a great job with that. Tucker's like one of the only people that has done that on with all the candidates like that on the stage. You don't need a debate. Hell, just do that. I was disappointed that Trump wasn't there. Yes. I don't care that he's won an election before. I don't care. And remember, voters, what is our mantra? What have you done for me lately? A lot of things can change in 4 years. A lot of news can happen in 4 years. I mean, my gosh, in 4 years, Biden allowed Russia to just go in and do a hell of a lot more than ever. So that's changed. You know, we've had a lot of stuff with China. I mean, different things with the economy. There's certain things that we need to know. Just because you've held office before, or that you were in that same office before, that doesn't mean that you don't have to continue to prove yourself to voters. That's not what this is. I just find that too lofty to be accessible for the average voter. We want to see candidates. We want to see them talk. We want to know what they think about current events that were not current events, or even events at all, when they were in office. And voters have a right to expect that. I was shocked at seeing some of the surrogates act like these voters did not have the authority, or they were just like, I can't believe your audacity in demanding that someone show up. Well, screw you, you Whig. I mean, good grief. This is America. You show up and you make your case with voters. I don't want to see nobody surrogate out there. Now, I like Carrie Lake a lot. She's been on the show. I can disagree with someone and they're not my enemy. So don't take this the wrong way. I cannot, if people get personal over politics, they cannot hang with me. But she made a remark about B-list when they were there at this event. And she was like, oh, well, this was the B-list. Or, right? Isn't that what she, yeah, the B-team. And I'm like, I just think that maybe you need to be a conservative longer and win an election before you can call people B-list. Just, or the B-team. I'm just saying. No offense, but I'm just saying. But it's true. Am I wrong? Like, I don't want to see people that only decided to like red hats in 2016 go out and try to criticize the validity of a lifelong conservative. Now, not everybody on that stage was a lifelong conservative. Let's be real. But you know what I'm saying. I just think you need to be a little bit more gracious and a little bit more self-aware than that. A little bit more humble. Just saying. But I wanted to see, there were some, just to quickly recap that, because it was taking place even after we were off air. I thought Vivek did a good job, but at the same time, I think Vivek is a stalking horse. I think he wants a cabinet position. I thought that Tim Scott did a pretty good job. I like Tim Scott a lot. I'm not going to pretend that being single and childless isn't going to be an issue for voters, particularly some women out there who, let's be honest, women, you judge a dude by how successful they are, not just in business, but by family. Especially after this administration. Am I wrong? No, Dana, you're not. Thank you. It's true. I mean, look at it. You had a president who didn't have no messed up kids. Now you got a president that's got messed up kids. Ladies, that counts for something, doesn't it? I mean, come on. Voters have a psychology. They don't want to admit it, but they do. That means something. People look at that. They're like, how are you going to sit here and, I mean, the American family is the cornerstone of this republic. We got to talk about this. It's not being weird. And you and I don't believe in this. Well, it's not our business. Like hell. My taxes pay your salary. Everything you do is my business. You get to determine whether or not my kids go to war. Everything about your life is my business. You get to make economic policy that determines how much tax I pay. Everything you do is my business. We don't do this not my business stuff. Oh, hell no. If you want it to be not your business, don't run for office. Because it's my business. It's your business. I get tired of that, don't you? I mean, we don't want to be busybodies. But when you're a politician, oh, yeah, you're signing up for it. You're like, yep, judge my life. And it's true. Absolutely true.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So Kane and I each found some pretty stunning Florida dude stories where they were hiding dope. Yeah, don't I know. So let's start it, right? Yeah, I didn't tell you how. The first one, Stephen Mattingly. He was arrested on drug charges. And I mean, I don't know how to say. So they were going to take him to jail for drugs. They pulled him over and he basically pulled a slap chop. But wait, there's more. The officer, when he looked in the black Toyota pickup truck, the guy wouldn't wear a seatbelt, and they saw like stuff that was extending out beyond the bed that he didn't have a thing on, you know, the red flag on. And he said that was asking him for all this stuff. And he noted that he had previous encounters, and he asked if he consumed narcotics. And Mattingly said, yes, I do. You know, and then when he was searching the vehicle, which Mattingly agreed, he got out, clear glass pipe with burnt residue fell out, tested positive for fentanyl. And then he's like, but wait, there's more. And then he showed him brown powdery substance in the pocket mirror above the driver's seat, fentanyl and meth, tested positive. Cup holders, fentanyl and meth. And then he pulled a bag of meth out of his butt. That is not a joke. He actually did it. It was a tied-off plastic bag, and it contained an off-white, yellowy, powdery substance that tested positive for fentanyl. Why are you going to keep something that could kill you in a baggie in your butt? Why? Kane, if he absorbed that, he'd be dead. Yeah. What in the world? He's not the brightest or the bulb in the lamp. He's Lake County Jail is where they took him. All right, now here's another feller who here's the headline. Florida man hides bullet and testicles when being taken to jail. Pinellas County. Michael Keanu Brennan. Don't you be doing Keanu's name like that. 24 years old, they found, I love how they go, they found a live bullet. They found a round in his jimmies. So he was apprehended by police because he was using stolen information on a credit card to pay for a luxurious 17-night vacation rental near the Gulf of Mexico. When they searched his rented home, they found all kinds of forged ID stuff, checks, social security cards, debit cards. He'd stolen from a lot of people, stolen a lot of identities. He admitted to having done it. And then when they asked him if he had any contraband when they were taking him to jail, he said no. But then they found a .22 nestled under his jimmies. Nestled. That's their words. I kid you not. A second deputy collected the ammunition, saying that it was a live feed, hadn't been fired. So that resulted in an additional felony charge because he had introduced contraband in a detention facility. First off, I don't want to know. No, I don't want to know. Never mind. I don't want to know how that worked.
No, me neither.
You just held it there? Wouldn't that have been uncomfortable?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even like tags in the back of my shirt. Can you imagine having a .22 under your jimmies?
Probably as uncomfortable as having meth in your butt.
Yeah, I know. Fentanyl! That. Golly! Can you, what is it? One little thing of that can kill a trillion people. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I can't with these guys. I cannot with these guys. So there's two separate dudes who, yeah. I'm not going to tell you about the guy, the teacher who drowned raccoons in front of students.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I can't because that happened because I want to drown that teacher in front of raccoons. Just say. All right. We got a lot more on the way. Our third hour. You don't want to go anywhere. A lot more of the Dana Show after this.
not only the national security things that we need to pass in the NDAA, but even some of these really extreme things they put in the bill are harmful to our national security. We're already having a recruitment and retention issue in our military.
Yeah.
And I cannot imagine any woman or family who might have a transgender child opting to join our military. Now, why would you do that when you're going to have less rights than you would as a civilian?
That's a stupid.
And, you know, I'm very concerned about what that's going to mean.
First off, that's so dumb. You're not going to have fewer. It's fewer rights, not less rights. Let's be grammatically correct. While we're like, oh my gosh, like, I'm doing the millennial thing in the camera. That's number one. Number two, they're a fraction of the population, and they're even a tinier fraction of the military population. And then number three, you do not have a right to demand that someone else fund your medically unnecessary surgery. Doesn't matter. And that's not about you have a recruitment issue. The recruitment issue is not solved by making people easier in their mental anguish. You just stick to being a fighting force. Either people want to join the fighting force or they don't. We're not going to sit here and go, oh, well, let's pay for your inversion of your penis. Let's go ahead and do that. We're going to pay for that surgery. Oh, my gosh. Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch here with you. Top of this third hour. It's already gone really fast. We got Stephen Yates, who I'm going to play for him that Chris Christie cut. And I'm very curious to get his reaction to that. But we're going to talk to him. We got all kinds of stuff coming up for you. But this, that's that NDAA thing. That's what they're still fighting over. And they are very much trying to get force Republicans to green light all of the DEI, the taxpayer funded trans, quote unquote, gender affirmation surgery. I'm like going through my mental Rolodex here. What was the other thing? Oh, the taxpayer-funded abortion on demand and transportation expenses, all this stuff, none of which has to do with any of that. So stop. Stop. It's silly. It's silly. And it wasn't Republicans who put that in. It was Democrats who put it in, who decided to make this about a culture war. Meanwhile, the rest of us are like, can we just focus on having a fighting force? It's kind of that. I mean, that's the bigger deal. But you can't. You can't focus on having a fighting force because you have to focus on all things culture. Like this, CNN running an on-air apology. Remember the segment that we told you about last week where they had this contributor who referred to Dylan Mulvaney as a he? Okay, this is the response after they got lit up by the rage mob. Listen.
Before we wrap up today, we do want to make an important note. Yesterday in a segment about transgender influencer Dylan Mulvaney, who was featured in Bud Light's recent campaign, she was mistakenly referred to by the wrong pronoun. And CNN aims to honor individuals' ways of identifying themselves, and we apologize for that error.
What error?
It wasn't an error.
Like, what error? You called him a dude. He's a dude. And that's not an error. That's science. Can you imagine? I would have quit my job and walked off set before I had to do that. There's no way. No way. That's what CNN does, though. They do this kind of stuff. When I was a contributor there back when I was like, this was around the 2012 election, I was the token conservative. And anytime I even breathed anything even remotely innocuous, like Media Matters and the leftist rage mob always and the Moms Demand people were always trying to get me fired. And they would always have the VP of Standard and Practices. You know, Dana, you should acknowledge this and apologize. And I can't tell you how many times I was like, put on a break for a week or a week here, or 2 weeks there, because I absolutely refused to apologize for any truthful utterance. I mean, we weren't there being inflammatory. We weren't there. You know, I wasn't there saying anything that wasn't true. I was simply saying that, you know, well, nationalized healthcare doesn't work, you know, something like that. Or why is the Department of Defense getting involved in green energy or something, you know, like that. And it's apparently everything is so offensive. Second Amendment rights matter. Everything is always so offensive. So they ran this on-air apology for misgendering. What a joke. That's like the whole practice of wrong speech. That's what people got in trouble for during the French Revolution, you know, since our government has this fetish with trying to think that we're like the French Revolution somehow. You guys remember Sam Brenton, the luggage twink?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he apparently, and I didn't know this at the time, you know, he's the guy who was the former deputy assistant secretary of the spent fuel and waste disposition in the Office of Nuclear Energy. Someone said he's a Matt Damon doppelganger. And I mean, I don't like Matt Damon, but that's really, that's low. Come on. So it turns out that when he was stealing people's luggage from the airports, he was doing so on secret taxpayer-funded trips. I know. Like, we paid to transport him. Like, he traveled on taxpayer dime. He was stealing women's luggage, literally stealing women's luggage, the luggage twink, Sam Britton, on taxpayer dime. I did not know that. That one was in the July 6, 2022. That's a year ago. Like, you know, a little over a year ago. He was at the Hilton Grand Vacations Club on the Strip. That four-day trip was like $2,000, according to Department of Energy expense report. They've never responded to any questions about it, by the way. And that was at Nevada National Security Site for an unspecified meeting and site visit. And then apparently there's like a couple of other, how many other trips did we pay for when he was stealing luggage? I mean, he needed a new dress for a secret meeting. So we were paying for this the entire time. And he's like, no jail time. Jeez. Democrat privilege on our tax dollars. Now, a key Hunter Biden witness, IRS whistleblowers are set to testify. And meanwhile, the House is still looking for some of these critical documents. So you have Devin Archer, who worked alongside Hunter Biden in the pursuit of global deals. He's going to be testifying. And he's apparently also weeks away from a prison sentence on federal conviction for fleecing investors involving Native American tribes, just like Democrats. Democrats did that, too. You ought to look some of that stuff up during the Clintons. Chris Hitchens has a whole book about it. No One Left to Lie To. There's a whole chapter about how Democrats under the Clintons, DNC, Hillary Clinton, were fleecing Native American tribes. Yeah, go read about that the next time any one of those Democrats tries to sit here and sell you some lip service about indigenous Americans. Go read how they fleece them for votes. It's fascinating. Still doing it today. So Archer is going to testify in front of House Oversight and Accountability Committee on what he knows. It's a transcribed interview. But he and I think Andy Biggs and others need a lot of these other other critical information. And isn't one of the IRS whistleblowers going to testify? So we'll see what happens from that. But I mean, it's crazy that nothing. You have to have a DOJ that's willing to actually pursue this. We don't have a DOJ that's willing to do that right now. That's why. You know, we're in this position that we're in because we don't have a DOJ that's willing to do that. You got to win elections for that. I know. All right. Some more culture. I'm trying to get because we got Stevie Yates coming up. Last week, a lot of people were slamming Luke Combs, not just for covering Tracy Chapman's number one hit Fast Car, but because apparently Fast Car, like Tracy Chapman apparently didn't make it on the country charts or something like that. Yeah, it was a pop song. When I was a kid, that song was hot. That song was everywhere. Did she win a Grammy for that?
3 Grammys.
Yeah. Yeah. Luke Combs covered Tracy Chapman's number one hit, Fast Car, made it a country hit. It reached number 2 on Billboard's Hot 100. He says he's loved it since he was a child. He wanted to record it and have it as a tribute to her. It's about her escaping her small town, finding a better life. I think it's a great song, but it's one of the most depressing songs I've ever heard, so I will never listen to it. I have a handful of songs that are great. I just won't listen to them because they're depressing. It makes me so depressed, right? You're like, oh my gosh, I just want to go jump off a roof. So she said she was honored. She was grateful for the fans who found the song. She was so happy for his success, but that has not stopped. All of these, who are these people that are so mad about Luke Combs recording her song? Like, there was this reporter, I'm bringing this up, because this song was in 88. So I was in fifth grade when this song came out. And listen to this reporter quote. As Luke Combs's hit cover of Tracy Chapman's Fast Car dominates the country charts, it's bringing up some complicated emotions, and fans and singers who know that Chapman is a queer black woman would have an almost zero chance at that achievement herself. Who is Emily Yar, and why is she so stupid? Chapman got more notoriety off of that song than Combs did, number one. She's making fat cash on the licensing and residuals of this. She's just going to sit back and enjoy them royalties. And this chick is this reporter who clearly thinks that history began the day she was born. She thinks that somehow this is a slight to Chapman. She's like, fewer than 5% of the songs on country radio were by women of color and alphabet. Oh, shut up. Now let's do a percentage of, like, on urban radio of country music artists. You stupid moron. There is a reason why all of the different genres are separated in terms of a consumption and measure on Billboard, etc. Because they're different styles. Stop it. Not everything has to be politicized. Do you live such a flat and uninteresting and unfulfilling life that you got to do this with everything? Tracy Chapman was happy that it was covered. She thought it was great. And she's making a lot of money. It's like when Dolly Parton, I Will Always Love You. Elvis wanted to record it. Dolly said no. Whitney Houston recorded it. Dolly, you know, was like, oh, that, you know, she did such a great song. Man, she earned royalties off that. So this was good that he did it. Why? Stop it. Why do people do this? This is clickbait division for the sake of being divisive. That song, this chick clearly doesn't know anything about that song because that song was literally everywhere. It was one of the top charting songs of like all time. I can't even remember. This chick does not need to be writing about music. I cannot stand it when people who don't like music write about music. And this Emily Yar is apparently one of them. You know, if it would have been a country song and if she would have had, you know, she would have had Nashville producers, and if she would have gone in the country circuit, that song would have been a hit song regardless. I mean, shut up. Quit sitting here acting like black musicians don't. Have you ever met Charlie Pride or heard of Charlie Pride? I mean, shut up. You have this white chick who actually herself is a racist because she has no clue about black participation in country music or in folk music or in anything else. She just thinks, well, I'm stupid about music and I don't know the history of music. So because I don't see people of color doing this at XYZ, then it must mean that it doesn't exist. I cannot stand stupid people who push division off of their ignorance. She ought to be ashamed. If I was the editor of this publication, I would publicly excoriate her, tar and feather her, and fire her, because that it's embarrassing to be that dumb. These people have no self-awareness. That's embarrassing to write a story about that and be so stupid about the history of that song. Don't show your face for a while, girl. Damn, like, find some shade.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So, first up here, the first Cybertruck. Tesla built its first Cybertruck. Didn't it come out of Giga, Texas? Yeah. Isn't that where it's built out of? Yeah. So it's the child's drawing truck. The first Cybertruck is rolled off the assembly line 4 years after it was unveiled to the public. It came out of the Giga, Texas manufacturing facility in Austin. All the Tesla staff had their hard hats and their vests and all that. They're all around the truck, so you can only see the top of it. It's kind of a funny picture. But so they got it. They got it. It's right there. It's designed for truck drivers who have to go long distances. It has an estimated battery range of up to 500 miles, acceleration from 0 to 60 in as little as 2.9, capabilities on water as well as land. It's the vehicle that, quote, changes the look of roads, better utility than a truck with more performance than a sports car, end quote. If it's big and loud, I'm going to be interested in it. I'm not going to lie. Like, because I love big, loud things. I know you're like, Dana, it's electric. But can it go loud? That's all I want to know. Like, can it be made to do that? I want big, loud things that scare people when I drive it. Because woman driver and giant car together, that's a terrifying thing. That's what I want people to feel when they're on the road next to me. Also, the NBC Washington says that the uploaded criteria for new FBI headquarters is announced, boosting Maryland locations. Isn't that nice? They said that they are apparently totally ignoring taxpayer costs with all of this stuff. Good. Man, that lovely. Just lovely. Oregon's Measure 114 bans what they call quote-unquote large capacity magazines, and they're trying to get a gun registry established. A federal judge apparently tried to find it constitutional. I have to question the intelligence of this judge. Oh, and you have to pay $65 too for your privilege of owning what you actually can own by natural rights affirmed by the Constitution. Isn't that something? Climate nut jobs blast paint on the Walmart Heiress's $300 million yacht in Ibiza. The Futuro Vegetal Group. Yeah, there you go. We got Stephen Yates coming up. Don't mess.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
You weren't in Iowa. You weren't at the Tucker Carlson forum. But if you were being pressed on Ukraine like that, how would you have responded?
I would have said, you've always been wrong about this, Tucker, and you're still wrong. That, in fact, what's going on, George, is that this is a proxy war with China. The Chinese are funding the Russian war by buying Russian oil. They're coordinating with the Iranians to provide lethal weapons to the Russian army. And we could decide when to have this conflict. Right now, the Ukrainians are willing to fight this fight for themselves if they have our support to be able to win it. If the Chinese watch us back away from Ukraine, as Tucker Carlson and others would advocate, believe me, the next move will be Taiwan.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about this when we, what was this, last hour? We played a little bit of this in the context of the 2024 stuff, because I cannot stand the way that this is constantly presented in the context of Ukraine. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. And I really wanted to get the thoughts of like an actual expert on the issues all involving China. It's our very good friend, Steve Yates, at YatesComms is who he is on Twitter, senior fellow at America First Policy Institute, and he's also the chair of the China Policy Initiative. So, Steve, I wanted to ask you, so I will say, and I stop after this, I think he's correct in that China is propping up Russia. I do think that there's a lot of truth in it. They're buying their oil, they're buying all this stuff. I get it. But where I stop agreeing with him is where he acts like if we don't support the Ukrainians, then China's just going to win. And any kind of, I guess, struggle with them is happening there in the context of Ukraine. I mean, that's at least my sense in how he presented that. I wanted to get your reaction to it.
Well, first, Dana, it's really hard to get past a guy who did not have the courage to go and sit down face to face with Tucker Carlson, but he wants to be president of the United States, and we believe he would stand up to Putin and Xi Jinping. But he's scared of a fired host from Fox News, apparently. Number one, I mean, it's in all seriousness, it's really a bad look to go to a former Clinton spokesman to shadow box with Tucker Carlson on this. So, I mean, that's not exactly projecting strength. But when you get to the substance of it, yes, the Chinese and the Russians are colluding. That used to be a bad word in D.C. And yes, if things go really, really badly in Ukraine, like it seemed like it might when Russia invaded, and if they had mowed over the Ukrainians, that would have been a travesty. It might have sent a green light signal to China. But the big piece that Chris Christie and his galaxy brain left out of the conversation was, what about the rest of Europe? The signal the Chinese are going to take first and foremost is not whether the United States is easy to get conned into an ever, never ending war. We've done that already. So the difference is the United States going to let our allies sit on the sidelines? Because for China, that's the difference between trying to play one-on-one jujitsu with the United States, or whether they've got a complicated mess of, will Japan do something? Will India do something? Will Southeast Asia do something different? Will Europe, contrary to popular belief and current behavior, will they do something? That's the X factor. And if he had it within his galaxy wits, that would have been a reasonable topic for conversation. But I don't expect that of George Stephanopoulos or Chris Christie, if you don't have the manhood to step into the arena for the real debate.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I'm going to steal that galaxy brain. It's mine now. Taking it forever. Talking with our friend Steve Yates. You make a really good point in that the deterrence is also, well, what's Europe doing? Because China looks, you know, it's what's happening with South China Sea, and they see Taiwan. If they bully Taiwan, well, then you know all the other Southeast Asian countries that you mentioned, that comes into play as well. China doesn't really want to open up that can of worms. I also think that isn't it kind of a bait? You can say it's a proxy conflict, but it's also a bait from China to keep everyone's attention on what's happening with this dying empire that they're using as a puppet, so that they can do their shady stuff over in the Pacific.
Well, there's a lot of shady going on all the way around. And, you know, we've talked for a couple of years now that there aren't really clean hands in any of these conflicts. And obviously the D.C. military industrial complex is in full force trying to get ahead on all of these fronts. I would love it if someone would have asked the newly really brave people that want to say, oh, Ukraine is where the future of the world is going to be determined. And now this new line of it being a proxy war with China. So your theory for managing the China threat is to send weapons to Ukraine. I mean, it has to be music to Beijing's ears. There has to be more to this. And what about our trade relationship?
Yeah.
What about technology? What about access to our southern border? There's a record number of undocumented military age Chinese men coming across the southern border.
Yeah.
Maybe all of those things might have more of an indicator of what's going on with China than, say, what happens with Ukraine. Although, you know, I don't want bad things to happen to the Ukrainian people, and I don't like Putin.
Yeah. See, I mean, but see, you can't say that because nuance doesn't exist anymore. What you just said, like if you are saying, well, maybe we shouldn't be sending all of this stuff over to Ukraine. Maybe we should ask for some accountability. You are apparently a Putin-loving Russian stooge. Them's the rules. Yeah.
I know. It's just smear and smear alike. But, you know, I thought these people were smart and got great degrees from big universities.
Yeah.
But they all fall back on small words.
Yeah. The other thing about this, too, we're talking with our friend Steve Yates. And I really wish there had actually been more conversation on China. I thought it touched on it. And I thought there for a little bit we were actually going to get into some of it. But then it kind of went back. I mean, they got pulled back to Ukraine. Because whenever anyone talks about objectives, like what are you wanting to accomplish? What does that look? Nobody can actually articulate what objectives they want accomplished and what a conclusion looks like in the conflict with Ukraine. I've not heard a single elected official at all articulate what that looks like.
The closest approximation are people that talk about there's going to have to be some attempt to negotiate for peace. And there's probably going to be some issues related to, are you going back to the original sovereign boundaries, or is that even possible? I mean, there's just no serious way to talk about how this ends without talking about defined territory. That used to be the way people with good degrees would define sovereignty in the way of international relations. And it's only recently that everything is fluid, and apparently including the definition of a country and whether we have borders. And so that actually is front and center in this.
Yeah.
I've heard President Trump talk a little bit about this. I've heard Vivek Ramaswamy talk a little bit about this. Some of the others nibble around the edges from time to time. But really, this is just a hobby horse for them to sound tough.
Yeah.
And that's all it really is. That's not actually doing a service to the Ukrainian people. It's not deterring Putin, and it's certainly not winning a proxy war with China.
That's a good point. We're talking with our friend Stephen Yates. One of the things you mentioned, it was a separate soundbite, and then it was turned into a question that I think that Carlson had asked DeSantis at one point. I wish they would have dove deeper into it. It had to do with China and the Pacific. But one of the things, too, that always is glossed over, and all of these candidates, and I know Christie has glossed over it. It's infuriating. Pence has glossed over it. The issue with South China Sea, China, Taiwan, like they talk into like the superconductor chips and the amount of trade. You brushed on this last time you were on with us. Remind everybody again the amount of trade that goes through that. It's not really contested only by China, but that portion of international waters that China's claiming is theirs.
I would wager to say that it's half of all trade in the world goes through the waterways that connect South Asia to East Asia and into the Pacific.
And that's major American interest.
Tremendous flows that are going through there because it's going from there over to the Middle East and Europe. It's going through there from those regions up in to the second largest economy in the world and the third largest economy in the world in China and Japan, if numbers are right. I don't really want to give China credit for being second, but it's just an enormous amount of global trade. And I think it's easily more than half.
Is it safe to say that if there would have been if there is any kind of disruption with that particular area, because then it affects, I mean, obviously it's an American interest, but then it also affects the interests of, you know, the Middle East. It affects the interests of a lot of other nations. It's a lot of entities, a lot of sovereign areas, you know, countries that China looks to to make mad. Is there any hesitancy on their part in your mind for them to create that issue?
Yeah, well, I mean, it all comes down to information warfare and whether you can define the narrative. I mean, the Chinese are doing their best to define America as the provocateur in all of this. We sent Nancy Pelosi over there, for heaven's sake. I mean, that's making war. And we're going to probably have the vice president of Taiwan stop by the United States in August on the way to an inauguration in Central America. And so they try to win the information war. And since we're so bad at even attempting this, that we sort of cede that ground to them. But if we leave it to the world to say, oh, well, it's tough American trade policy. It's Americans advocating decoupling. We've pinned them into a corner by selling defensive weapons to Taiwan. Then you can't really blame people in the Middle East and other parts of the world to say, all I've heard is Americans are really pushing the envelope on this. Our leaders have got to get better at winning that information space before this happens. That would do more than anything else to ensure peace and deterrence.
Yeah, last question for you, talking with our friend Steve Yates at YatesComms on Twitter. Operation Atlantic Resolve, the amount of reservists, Joe Biden calling up reservists, and from what everything that I understand from military families and those who are serving and, you know, others, it's the type of reservists apparently that were called up, apparently those who had just recently retired. So they're in this like 5 to 10 year bracket that makes it incredibly different. Someone was saying the last time that those type of reservists had been called up was like during Reagan's administration. That seems significant. And I realize that this is an operation that got its start in 2014, which I quite frankly don't understand why. I know it's a NATO operation. I don't really understand why, but and why it continued. But I wanted to get your thoughts on this, because the way, you know, from the outset, it looks like, you know, you have, you know, Mr. President McUnity toddler stomping us into World War III, because then that could be looked at as escalation unnecessarily.
Well, operationally, I don't understand what this really is going to achieve, but I would see that there probably are people who know better the operational piece to say, well, this is part of the tactics that's going to make whatever difference in this conflict. But if you step back from it, it's a horribly bad look. And I've got a son that's 18 years old and wonders what this draft stuff might be.
Yep.
At some point.
Same here.
You know, there's, you know, all kind, and you, at some point people say, oh, well, that's never going to happen, never going to happen. Well, this conflict was never supposed to go on this long. There were not supposed to be any American forces involved in all of this. NATO and Europe was supposedly unified and they were going to help and do all kinds of things. This is still just dragging and dragging. And if you're of a certain age in America and you think of a war dragging on, I mean, first, you're probably thinking of Afghanistan and Iraq. But there are some of us that are old enough to remember family members that had those haunting words in Vietnam, where things that just drag on and drag on and people get called up and there's mission creep. And this has all the earmarks of mission creep. And it's another one of those things. If that's not true, the burden really is on the administration to tell the truth and win that narrative true, too. And we really haven't heard anything to assuage those concerns.
Mm-mm. And we need to hear more from, I think, Republicans, instead of everyone trying to use, and not everyone, but it's like there's a handful of them that are in the primary that are trying to use this as a measure of, well, I guess you don't love America and you love Putin if you don't want to send everything over to Ukraine. I'm just about done with it. Just about done with it. You and I are probably holding on to the edges of manners with our fingertips here. Just, it's all we got left.
I've never run into the censorship bubble on this or button on this show, but that one comes close.
Yeah, we'll be. Well, you know what? I know Brendan Carr. So, you know, as long as he's at the FCC, I got to get out a free pass. You know, I got to get out of jail free pass. So I'll use that for us. Stephen Yates. Excellent. At YatesComms. Always a pleasure. Thank you, my friend. Good to see you. Have a great week.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
So I took the name Crooked away from Hillary, and we gave her a new name, Beautiful. I call Beautiful, and she's so beautiful.
Why?
But why? I took it away because I don't believe in the same name for two people. I don't like her. And I've never done this before. You know, I haven't, and you have to live with that name for the rest of your life. I'll go over the different names, but I won't, because many of them are now friends of mine, okay?
Okay, you can't campaign on Lock Her Up and then like, okay, now everybody like her. No, she got people killed in Benghazi. No, no. Welcome back to the show. No. I ain't calling her beautiful. What in the, stop it. Man, he's harsher on some of the Republican primary candidates than he is on Hillary. I gotta say. Just gotta say. Woo. Man, I tell you what. This, the 2024 thing is just getting kind of ridiculous. I gotta say. I'm getting kind of tired of it. People just need to chill. They've got to chill. But I will say, I'm never calling her beautiful. Never happening. It's never happening. Never going to happen. I noticed, too, the former president, Barack Obama, he was defending some of those books that have been banned.
Yeah.
Excuse me? Has he read them? That's rhetorical, because we all know he has it. The people who are defending, and these aren't books that have been banned. These are books that our parents are going, yeah, maybe it's inappropriate for graphic novels featuring, you know, hardcore pornography to be shown to our elementary school children. It's might be age appropriate. Maybe we could not do that. So all the Transtifa people are like, oh, you're a bigot. You're banning books. But they didn't ban books the way that y'all did the Dr. Seuss stuff or Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn. I mean, good heavens. I'm going to go over Kane's time because he's curated Today in Stupidity. Do you like this one? Are you happy with your selection, sir?
Well, it was going to be number one because Kamala Harris is just, but everyone knows she's stupid.
We have a ton of words out from her.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen was out there talking about wage growth is moderating, inflation is subsidizing. Oh, prices are up 16.6%. Real wages are down 3%, but she's still out there parroting this.
Job openings, but wage growth is moderating and inflation is subsiding. So I think we're in a good path on the United States.
I like Juan's editorial, where the pictures he chooses for the simulcast. Yeah, that's your favorite audio, I can tell. Folks, sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. I'll be back with you tomorrow.